Welcome to CICK News, the only news source in the North truly dedicated to local stories on the ground. CICK News addresses the diverse needs of the underserved communities between Burns Lake and Haida Gwaii through firsthand stories and in-depth interviews. CICK News funding is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially support campus and community radio stations in Canada, as well as the Government of Canada. We are your hosts, Pam Hassan and Dan Messick, and we are on the dial at 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. Our call letters are CICK, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com, or follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Smithers Community Radio.
Today on CICK News, last week on March 29th, the RCMP's Community Industry Response Group executed a search warrant and again raided the Gitindam camp at 44 kilometer along the Maurice River Forest Service Road. The RCMP allegedly sought to recover stolen property from a CGL worksite. However, following the raid and arrests of five people, police have yet to recover any of the items listed in the search warrant. This latest incident also reached the ears of the Permanent Forum on the Rights of Indigenous People and the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva with the help of Chief Namox of the Wet'suwet'en. Here is the UN orator in Geneva.
The Wet'suwet'en traditional territory was raided by the Coastal GasLink mercenaries, a branch of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, on behalf of Canada yesterday. Canada manufactures consent through statutory or puppet government institutions, despite that the 1997 Del Magook case recognizes traditional government authority. The Vatican is complicit in manipulated political partnerships emanating from the doctrine of discovery, committing crimes against humanity and dispossession of indigenous territory. The treaty study of Professor Miguel Alfonso Martinez in paragraph 2221 describes coercion or aggression by armed force, judicial or legislation as part of the history of indigenous. This is a violation of Common Article 2 of the Geneva Conventions, where armed conflict is not necessary for an occupation. This is tantamount and is characterized as by denial of the right to self-determination based on doctrines of discovery, and apartheid legislation is a crime against humanity. We ask the Human Rights Council and its bodies to address the grave violation of rights based on legislation and violations of international law. Thank you.
Today, we'll hear from Chief Namox, who is in Saskatoon to attend the Royal Bank of Canada's AGM, the primary bank financing the Coastal GasLink pipeline project, and to send a message to the shareholders of that bank that continued construction of that pipeline amounts to the continued infringement of Indigenous rights. But first, after more than a year, the Gitxala Nation has launched their much-anticipated legal challenge of BC's Mineral Tenures Act in BC Supreme Court, which they say has impacted their territory and salmon populations, which their people rely on. This case has huge potential to change the way minerals are claimed in BC and the future of mining as we know it. It could also chart a path forward when it comes to Indigenous land claims and reconciliation in this province. Here is my conversation with Gitxala Chief Counselor Linda Innes. Stay with us.
Hi, my name is Linda Innes. I am the elected Chief Counselor of the Gitxala Nation, and I'm here in Vancouver today attending the mineral tenure case on behalf of Gitxala, our hereditary chiefs, and our community.
Thanks so much for being with us, Linda, today here on CICK News. Firstly, I just want to ask, how does it finally feel to be here this day starting the case, which has been much anticipated across the province?
Well, it was, we have great support for sure. I feel very supported by our nation. I feel very supported by our hereditary chiefs and the rightful title holders of our nation. And I feel very supported by our legal counsel and the other nations that we have as interveners, such as Ahadasat, Gixan, Newhalt, BCAFN, BC Human Rights. So we have a lot of support, and, I'm feeling very hopeful that the courts will hear our ask and that we will be heard after. It's a long time overdue. The Mineral Tenure Act is an antiquated law that interferes with our title and rights holders, and it disrespects our laws. And, you know, we've had our history of Gikatla, we've had a history of bad mining within our territory. And, you know, what we're experiencing right now is, and what we're asking for the court, is that the Crown has to declare that the Crown has a duty to consult with First Nations, the Crown has a duty to consult with Gikatla, and that we want the Crown to assess the Crown's duty under DRIPA, and that we're seeking a remedy. Remedy we're seeking is the duty to consult. And under, like, the province has a constitutional duty to consult, but under the Mineral Tenure Act, they actually deny that. And then when it comes to DRIPA, we're feeling that DRIPA is not a promise. It needs to be an act that is actually enforceable.
Linda, I know where this, originated around Banks Island, some mining tenures on Banks Island. There was a devastating rupture and spill on a mine site on Banks Island a few years back in 2015. How do you feel about the possibility of being successful in this case, but also the implication of that this could really change how mining is done in the province and how Indigenous rights are recognized and respected?
Well, there's been court case after court case. You have the Chilcotin, you have the Haida case, and they all recognize, you know, that the duty to consult, especially under the Haida case. And the Crown has never consulted Gikatla, and yet 16% of Banks Island, or Lac-Nakajal, which is the traditional name of our territory, is slated for with mineral tenures. And we have never ceded or surrendered our traditional territory. And when it comes to mining activity, you know, by the time we're notified that of mining, they're already in the permitting phase under the Mines Act, and we're not afforded that opportunity to participate in that conversation. So, you know, it just doesn't give us that opportunity to engage, and the Crown ignores that, the fact that they have a duty to consult, and so do proponents. But in the long term, I think this would open the door for proponents to come in and have those meaningful consultation and engagement with First Nations anywhere in BC.
You know, one other thing I wanted to touch upon is the fact that there are other interveners that are dealing with similar situations. You mentioned the Gitxsan, you know, there are similar situations with mine permits on their territories that are problematic as well. All of the interveners who do fall into this category and have mining on their territory have been impacted in some way because of those mines. How have you and your people and your nation been impacted by some of the ill-fated mines on your territory?
Well, back in 2015, we had a breach of the tailing ponds from Yellow Giant Mines, and then the company went bankrupt. So there's never been any restoration of the sites to this date. And those, the tailings were being drained, purposely drained into our salmon-bearing streams. And the province failed to act. Investigators were never sent there in a timely manner. And when they were ordered to shut down, they didn't shut down. So you can imagine the psychological harm that's been caused to our people, to our chiefs, to our landholders, and to our traditional harvesters. Banks Island is a sacred site for our people. And we have a saying that when the tide is low, the table is set, because that has always provided for our people since time immemorial. Our ancestors occupied the territory. They lived there. They used it. They managed it. And it was meant to be sustained for generations to come. And if we're looking at mining within the territory, we are not looking, you know, we cannot fall back on promises that someone's going to do the right thing and clean it up that someone's going to protect our interests. Someone's going to protect the future, the future generations' interests for years to come. If we don't do this now, nothing will change. And there's been talk of mineral reform for years. There's been requests for mineral reform for years, and they've fallen on deaf ears.
Just lastly, Linda, before I let you go, you know, an ideal situation, if you are successful, you know, that's a starting point. But what would you like to see in the future? How would you like to see mining in British Columbia change for the better on all fronts? There's often been talk of putting up, having companies to put up a bond in case something does go wrong to be able to clean it up. What would you ideally like to see come out of this?
Well, under the Mines Act, it's been there for years where companies have to put up a bond. But within our Kitikatla territory, our experience is the bond is not sufficient enough. And then and you know, they don't want to put that cost on taxpayers either. So the province is not enforcing that cleanup. So the bonds are really not sufficient to meet the there's got to be better standards all around in order for those bonds to meet the cleanup and the closure. And, you know, like I've seen the regulatory review process, and, you know, those can be co-developed with First Nations on what does that restoration and reclamation look like once a mine is closed. You know, I've seen regulatory reviews where they have these plans on restoration and reclamation. And right now the bond is just a piece of paper, it's money, and it's not sufficient to cover the damage that has been done. And, you know, we're not looking to, you know, despite the concerns from industry, we would expect that there is a duty to consult. We're not looking to harm people. We've been harmed. We're not looking at interrupting the viability of mining. And good proponents will know that the best way to do business with First Nations is to come and speak to the landholders.
All right. We'll leave it there for now. But Linda, thank you so much for giving us your time today, and good luck as you move forward with the case.
All right. Thank you so much for having me today, Dan.
That was Chief Counselor for the Gitxala Nation, Linda Innes. Coming up next, we'll speak with Chief Namox of the Wet'suwet'en about the recent raid that took place at the 44-kilometer camp on Gitxala territory and why he is in Saskatoon at the Royal Bank of Canada's AGM.
I am Hereditary Chief Namox of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. I am a Hereditary Chief of the 22,000 square kilometers.
Great, Namox. Thanks so much for being with us again here on CACK News. Of course, you've had a busy couple of weeks, but maybe you can tell us first, where are you right now and what are you preparing for this coming week?
Currently, I am in Saskatoon and we are to attend the RBC AGM here right at Delta Hotel where I am staying. I figured if we're going to be here to talk to them, stay right where they are.
Yeah, maybe tell me a little about, you know, you're there at the AGM for the Royal Bank of Canada, as I understand it. Maybe walk me through some of what people can expect to see from you and going to the AGM this week. Why are you there and what's the message you're trying to bring to the RBC shareholders?
Well, we need to bring the fact to them that, you know, they are a major investor in pipelines and other oil and gas fossil fuel infrastructures to the tune of $262 billion, and $10.8 billion of that was involved in just the last year. And they need to understand what that money is doing, the destruction of lands, water, salmon, our security, our freedoms, and the very fact that they need to understand that they've got to be held accountable for what their money does. Somebody has to truly understand that it's more than just a dollar figure. It is everything that is attached to it. Whenever they say that, you know, we're going to use this 2050 timeline to make a difference, the difference should have been made decades ago, not 2050. They need to realize that. They have to understand what UNDRIP is, free, prior, and informed consent, which they haven't got from the hereditary chiefs on our territories to build a pipeline. And they need to know that the lack of humanity that is attached to their money has to be reinvested. They have to look at the moral consequences, not just the financial consequences.
I know that you guys have been gaining a lot of support over the last couple of years in dealing with this, with the situation. Of course, a lot of the attention has been focused on RBC, even getting support from Hollywood, some support from Hollywood, which has an affiliate in the U.S. that holds a lot of celebrities' monies. But very little has moved on that, although that we've seen, you know, a lot of support coming, trying to get these banks to divest from these fossil fuel projects. It still seems like they're digging in. Is that kind of the message that you've been hearing from them as well and their shareholders? Or do you feel that some of their shareholders are concerned about this and might actually support your efforts?
Well, you're exactly right. We get support from around the world. Like when you talk of Hollywood and the musicians, directors, you know, we have the likes of like Mark Ruffalo, Meryl Streep, Leonardo DiCaprio, and they've all said the same thing, that the divestment of that money, they had no idea what their money is doing, because RBC owns Citibank, which is the bank they deal with. And they said, we need to have better. And they're looking into having currently four smaller banks to move their money to, make them players, because they will invest in the future, and RBC is not. Like I said before, that 2050 timeline they have, and the greenwashing that they're using in their ads and communication that they have with their shareholders, that has to stop. The truth has to be told.
Now, Namox, are you planning on speaking at the AGM directly to those shareholders?
Absolutely. We have a contingent of about 8 of us that are here. I'm going to support the motion put forward by Union of BC Indian Chiefs, as well as a BCGEU. And in that one, it was about upholding free, prior, and informed consent, acknowledging and implementing UNDRIP, and making sure that they have a plan for the future, making sure their messaging is clear and it can't be just financial statements. Let's look at the damage to the planet. Let's look at the damage to the human. They have to be aware of what's going on. They can't just look at numbers and say, this is what they're doing, and look at the bottom line. The bottom line is that money is killing this planet. That bottom line is that they're working on taking away the very democracy of this country, which is the voice of the people, and it can't be just steered by money. But a type of money that they control and loan out to support projects in the fossil fuel industry, there has to be consequences. Maybe the consequences is people walk away. You know, when we have people that are in support worldwide, let's make them understand that they understand money. Okay, well, this money has to talk, but talk in the right direction. And that's future.
Now, Namox, I just want to shift, some of the attention for the moment. Obviously, there have been a number of situations, episodes that have unfolded over the last few years regarding the Ginnadan clan and the checkpoint camp village site that they have out at 44 and with workers of Coastal GasLink as well as their security force and the RCMP. Just the most recent episode was that the RCMP executed a search warrant and subsequently arrested 5 people at the 44 camp. This was all precipitated on a complaint that was filed by Coastal GasLink security that one of their workers was swarmed by a group of individuals who, you know, for lack of a better word, from the RCMP attacked this worker with flares and stole some equipment. That ended up causing a search warrant and these subsequent arrests. You know, what do you have to say for some of that activity? What do you think is going on out there? Could you give us an update as to what happened and again, what is the situation unfolding and what comes next with the 44 camp as some of these incidents seem to be continuing as construction carries on?
Well, the very fact that this is the first time they've used a search warrant, then they state Crown land. It's not Crown land. We've never signed a treaty. We're unceded, and we've never, ever even planned on signing a treaty. So it's land in dispute. It is still under control of the Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chief on behalf of our houses and clans. You know, when CGL signs agreements with reserves, reserves only have authority within the boundaries of the reserve, just like a municipality. The territory belongs to the houses and clans, and all the clans have stated no pipeline on the territory. Now, when they come in there and they say they have a search warrant, they were looking for a power saw, mask, and camo gear. I don't know. I've never seen CGL wear camo gear, and we have enough power saws. We don't need to be taking anybody's power saws. So it was just their way of more intimidation, their way of extending their violence upon our people, and they had arrested five. Because all the people out there, all we asked was, we want 15 minutes to read the search warrant. We want to talk to our legal representatives. They said absolutely not. They punched one of the fellas in the face and put him face first on the ice, handcuffed him, one of our ladies. They put zip straps on her for simply wanting a witness. They weren't violent in any way. They said, we want to make sure that you're not going to plant evidence on us because we know we didn't do it, but we want to monitor what you're doing. It's pretty much the same idea that they use with DFO, tell them that we are violent people and we should stay away for their own safety. That way DFO doesn't monitor out there. So the narrative they got is not the truth, really. We are the chiefs. We told them we'll always remain peaceful. The violence comes at us in so many forms. Like I said, this is the first time they used a search warrant, and yet in a matter of months, we did hundreds of visits and walks through our village sites there, saying it's a safety concern, up to 8 and 10 times a day, middle of the night, all day long. But this is the first time they came up with saying, oh, we're going to look for a power saw and camo gear. I'm like, why on earth would you do that? And then not even allow our people to witness what they're doing, because we don't trust them. We know they tamper with evidence. We know they plant evidence. So now that narrative of we're there and we're violent, I think it's because they don't want to admit that their drill under Wetsinko is stuck. It hasn't moved for a month. That's going to quadruple the cost of that project right there. So they're just deflecting on the truth. And we thought, well, you know what? We need to be at the RBC AGM and tell the people what that money is funding, why CERB is such in dire straits that they have to go and be so violent. We're also working to have CERB disbanded. You can't have an arm of the RCMP created in 2017 simply to allow industry to till waters, rivers, the air, add to greenhouse gas emissions, allow to enhance climate damage throughout the planet. So this is what we're doing, and we'll do it peacefully all the way through, no matter what narrative the government of Canada, British Columbia, CGL, Forest Site Security, or the RCMP put out there.
You know, it seems like this is not the first time that the RCMP have raided that camp before. As you mentioned, this is the first time they've actually had documentation, a warrant, a search warrant. You know, but what do you make of them claiming that there was a security, a Coastal GasLink security officer that was swarmed by, in their words, a group of individuals wearing masks and camouflage at the 43-kilometer mark? What do you make of that, if that's what the RCMP are putting out there?
I'd like to have their definition of swarming. You know, a couple of people go in there, of course, they're going to be insulted and put insults back, but we would never condone violence. You have to think about last July. We had 30 people going out there to raft the river, to feel how it is to drink out of the river, and yet they put out the narrative that there were 30 protesters and that they had to call in CERB, and yet they were government representatives. You know, they were guests on the territory to enjoy the territory, but unfortunately, they got caught up in all of this, and they were labeled violent protesters. Like, how dare they put out that narrative?
Now, Namox, again, you know, the other day there was a situation that unfolded at the UN in Geneva, the forum, the permanent forum on the rights of indigenous people. Tell me a little bit about how that came to be following this incident out at 44 with the arrests of five people. How did that all come to be, and what was said? What was the message that was sent to the UN? What was that?
Well, that transpired because an ambassador from Alaska contacted me and wanted an update. And he said, you know, I got an opportunity to bring it to the UN, should I? I said, absolutely. The world has to know what's happening up here. So him and I worked on a statement just previous to him presenting it. And it just so happened to be the very same day that the doctrine of discovery was repudiated. So all tied together perfectly. But getting the truth out to the world is what has to be done. I've spoken there three times previously, twice in New York, once in Geneva. They are well aware of what is happening in Canada. They are well aware that the abuses of human and Indigenous rights are happening. And it has to be remembered, the UN has actually sent Canada three letters in regards to that, and Canada has not responded once.
Namox, maybe you can tell me what comes next after this.
Well, the very fact that we've never agreed to this from day one, there was not any free, prior, and informed consent, and the damage that they're doing to the Northwest. You've got to realize our rivers flow to the Skeena as well as the Fraser. So we have a huge responsibility to our neighbors downstream as well as downwind. The wind blows and water flows. We're not talking about just one small area. We're talking about British Columbia, which affects Canada, which affects the world. And our next step is to continue to ever allow them to have this here catastrophic pipeline built in our territory, because it just adds to it. And you said Kitimat LNG, you know, that $40 billion project, you know, it keeps saying it's in the highest private investment in the history of Canada. But why should Canada be investing in killing the climate on this entire project? One of the worst polluters would be that if it was ever finished. Let's talk about the hydro. Where are they going to get the hydro from? They aren't going to have the hydro. So we got to look again at the damages to the Northwest, to the rivers, to everything that we rely on. It is simply, to them, just a footnote in their reports. And yet this is our life. This is our home. This is our future. This is for our children. They are not looking at that. They need to realize that. And we are going to bring that message to them.
All right, Namox, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks so much for your time. Of course, as always, I'm obliged to you for answering my questions.
And thank you for listening, because people have to know the damage. We know the damage because we've seen it elsewhere. We really want our waters poisoned. We really want our grandchildren not to know what freedoms are. That is what we're doing.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.